Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio, for your listening discomfort and displeasure, because ultimately, you know, look, let's face it, the news has never been something you've enjoyed listening to, is it? It's not, you know, fun and laughing and having all wonderful cheer and being of a chipper nature, is it?
You can take the piss.
You can. Well, at least I can.
Yes, me too.
And I do. And
yeah,
we do.
I know.
And there's an entire point behind taking the piss. That's my guess, by the way, George Gritton, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give you a little bit of an introduction for a second, but I was kind of thinking about this earlier today. I just want to say this a little bit here. About not taking yourself too seriously, not taking these really serious issues too seriously, because sometimes they can corrupt and destroy you because of their serious nature. And if you don't have a release, if you don't have humor, right, you will not survive through the darkness. But sometimes that light at the end of the tunnel is actually just a train coming in the other direction. George Gritton, a very special guest, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hello. And you make the same point as I've made often myself. I've come across people who've peered into the abysses, either of child sexual abuse or of mega financial crime, and they end up being crushed by it. And it's not the point, because they can't then carry on doing the good work, and it wrecks them as well. So it's important to giggle insanely from time to time.
I believe. Now, anyway, George, please give us a little bit of an introduction about who you are and what it is for you do for the uninitiated, and then we're going to get into the real meat and potatoes of the subject matter.
Okay, well, I do quite a wacky number of different things. I'm into information systems and maths. I do a fair amount of amateur psychology that's pretty good. But getting close to where we chatted before, I've been for a while into child protection recovery, and you achieve that by dealing with the offenders. Oh, and Janner, there's some sort of a Janner event going on in the Real Courts of Justice later this morning here in the UK, which means that some justice and some healing may come to his targets. I just heard that from Philip Lafferty on an email. I've also been into...
I'm completely unaware of who that is. Could you explain?
Yeah, Janner was a Labour MP, Member of Parliament, and then a peer who all the fucking time was sexually abusing kids in care homes or abuse homes where he came from, up in the north of North Midlands of England.
Literally all the fucking time?
Oh, he was notorious. I mean, see, he was due to be tried, and there were 25 witnesses. 25 witnesses lined up. And then he played the dementia card, and there was a huge debate as to whether he would stand trial or whether he'd be subjected appropriately to something called a trial of the facts.
He played the dementia card. What is this, a game of Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, no, it's something that somebody called Ernest Saunders did before at the Guinness scandal. You make out that you've lost your marbles, and you get pushed around in wheelchairs and you wear a cap. And he then played, and people weren't running with it, and then he played the death card. And it is said that he died. And there's an awful lot of us over here that don't believe that he died, but that he pissed off the Israel in the wakes. You know, like Leon Britton, a lot of us think, vanished off to Israel, who is another notorious child sex abuser. But he died, and there was a great comment saying, well, no, we can't try him, you know, after he's popped his clogs. And it was horrifying. And I've just heard this. I was reading my emails just 5 minutes ago. And there is actually, in the Royal Courts of Justice, there is some sort of a process by which, you know, his targets, and I don't use the word victims because targets can recover, victims can't, they're going to get their day in court. And I'm, you know, I literally only found this out a few minutes ago. It's so fabulous. Such a step in the right direction. Because we, as I'm not quite sure, well, no, you are pretty aware, we have had so much child sexual abuse carried out by people who get into positions of power to do it and cover their tracks. Goes back decades and decades. Ted Heath, and these people get blackmailed. They get put into positions of power and advanced, and then people say, well, if you don't do this, we're going to expose you, Buster. And that's my theory of why Ted Heath did two things. One, dragged us into the common market, and two, introduced consumer credit here in the UK. And, you know, as you'll be aware, consumer credit has been one of the most cripplingly devastating, awful things for people who are in work, you know, have an income, but then buy on credit and devote future net income to paying interest rather than paying for goods and services. The consumer credit was a really, really dirty trick. It needs to get banned along with government borrowing at some stage in the near future. I digress, however.
Yes.
But it's, you know, there are so many people vanishing off the scene here. Some dying because they exposed it all. A lot dying because it's much more convenient to die than to face trial and exposure. You know, disc jockeys, politicians, judges. So many people have climbed to the top of that area to be able to get away with it, to be able to cover their tracks. And the scale of the problem is staggering. The royals are in it. It's
a global syndicate.
It is indeed. And it's religious folk for me that are the number one suspects. Mostly the Book of Talmud Brigade, followed hotly by the Catholics. And the Catholic, you know, the Catholic Church, I've got so many pictures of popes groveling at the feet or kissing the hands of or kissing, you know, top State of Israel people.
So you're saying you've got the Talmud and a foul mood?
Well, yeah, I'm in a foul mood permanently when talking about the Book of Talmud. You know, these guys, are very, very, very damaged and damaging people, and it's been going on for 3 or 4 millennia. You know, this usury stuff is one thing, and also the practices they have around newborn male children. You know, well, the newborn infant doesn't know what the hell is going on. But when, say, a kid that's just emerged from infancy of 5 or 6 or 7 sees what a rabbi does, you know, circumcision, one thing, but, you know, what came up recently in New York is that kids were being infected with herpes because there's this cleansing of the wound bit of the ritual that involves a rabbi sucking the penis of a newborn infant. Were you aware of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, I was, and I was about to mention it, but you took the words right out of my mouth, as it were.
So this is how traumatizing can you get? You know, so here's this kid, and surrounded by adults who are all nodding their head wisely at what's going on. And, you know, it is I think we recognize compassion in each other. It's an awful thing for a kid of, you know, 5, 6, 7.
And it results in permanent trauma in a lot of cases, because a lot of people don't know what a personality disorder looks like, because personality disorders are just like normal behaviors, quote unquote, with the average person. But when you permanently traumatize somebody with an experience that they barely remember, you alter their personality.
Well, I can't remember how much we went into before, but I suffered the misfortune to have a sexual and psychological psychopath as my mother. And I also had some profoundly good and caring influences in my first 7 years. So I'm a survivor. And also then I went for about 6 years of sheer hell. And then I came across some more caring influences. And these were primarily three monks, three Benedictine monks at the school that I went to, Ampleforth. And, you know, so many of the other monks there were up to, you know, sexual shenanigans with boys. And these were three giants of care human beings who just took me under their wing. They didn't get far in the church hierarchy. You know, they weren't housemasters and they weren't up for being abbot and cardinal. Do you know who Cardinal Hume was?
No.
Now he was the English Catholic cardinal, and he was previously Abbot Basil Hume at Ampleforth Abbey, and his early results involved getting two monks who parents and kids had ganged up against to report for child sexual abuse. And what did he do with them? He moved them on to a parish where there weren't, you know, Ampleforth is a top fee-paying school, and so you got a lot of parents who, you know, got their act together. So these two monks, Piers Grant Ferris and Gregory Carroll, they were moved off to a parish. And in Carroll's case, to a particularly vulnerable parish, where people were going to regard the parish priest as, you know, high God. And they were finally both imprisoned 20 or 25 years later. And around that time, Basil Hume slightly wondered, but I knew personally, what he'd done, if he'd done something wrong by not, you know, reporting them to the police and getting them arrested. And Basil Hume was a great fan of, do you know who Sir Jimmy Savile was? Savile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
old Savile Bags.
Savile Bags, you know, who's the most prolific child sex abuser and corpse abuser that this country has known. Yeah, over 400 accounts have come forward of what he used to get up to. And he was awarded the Order of St. Gregory in the Vatican, top Vatican honour, by a pope with Basil Hume there smiling in approval. Yeah.
Talking about the most powerful global criminal syndicate that has ever existed on the face of the planet Earth, that is now incorporating the use of technology in order to feed their sexual depravity and addictions to abuse and power.
So which was the subject of that statement? The Catholic Church or the Jewish Church? Or I missed the first word.
The first word of what?
Oh, your sentence. Were you talking about the Catholic Church?
No, I was talking about just generalized scumbaggery Catholic Church. I mean, and the Vatican's only just one real part of it.
Well, it's a pretty solid part of it. The book of you know, what's now the state of Israel is right at the heart. The Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, you know, who've been usurers for millennia, ripping people off with interest, you know, they're pretty high players. Then you've got the royals, various royal families around the place, and the new royals, you know, the ones that made billions. Bill Gates, Larry Ellison is a pretty choice person as well, and now they call themselves philanthropists. You know, they rip people off blind and then say, oh gosh, I'm a nice guy, I'm going to give away my money.
Yeah, it's called being a criminal sociopath.
Yeah, well, there's one lovely bloke from the States who made a mega pot of money with duty-free shops. Now, duty-free shops, everybody wins because, you know, in an airport and a ship, the passengers win because they get some cheap booze. The shops win, you know, because they do good business. He accumulated a vast, vast fortune, billions. A few years back, he gave it all away, bar a few million to live on. And he gave away for education. So he made a lot of money out of doing something pretty harmless. And then he thought, hey, fuck this. This money's doing me nothing. And he gave away billions of dollars. He just put it into trusts so that kids get better education. And that is one really wise person for me, because he realized what is valuable in this world. And, you know, being a Warren Buffett and being, you know, the most obscenely rich person is, you know, okay, you get your kicks, you can buy the odd extra yacht on a whim. But if you do something real for a human being, a kid, a young person, yeah, what you get back from that person, saying, gosh, thank you, you know, that is good. And, you know, sociopathy and psychopathy, in my view, the world has this beautiful planet that you're on the other side of, and it's, you know, afternoon tea time over here, over there, while it's stupid hour of the morning over here. We've got two problems. One is human population, and the other is psychopathy.
Well, the human population being controlled by those who suffer from psychopathy.
Well, no, I think that's I take a semantic, and mind how you pronounce that, objection, because the psychopaths are using the population issue as a pretext. Oh, there's a third P. They're using it as a pretext to engage in mass murder, mass destruction.
Well, they're using the general population as flying monkeys to go off and do their bidding, essentially, via manipulation and various other stresses caused by finances and poor health, etc., that corrupt their behaviour, hence making them easier to control and also easier to direct at the people who might be exposing them.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, the credit, consumer credit stunt that Ted Heath pulled. You know, well, it means that people end up with their credit card limit, and it's quite carefully arranged. And you know, I'm there at the moment. I'm sorting it now. Each month, I have to pay off a minimum amount, and then I get charged with interest. So I'm in this sort of lock position. And there are millions of people like this here in the UK, in the US, down under. And it's, you know, it is naked enslavement. And the people who finally can't pay get made bankrupt. They lose their house. And over here we have this council houses sale scam, which Thatcher put in shortly after Heath. And Thatcher was a great person for covering up child sex abusers, as well as being another great mate of Jimmy Savile's.
I had a conversation with somebody earlier today, and somehow Thatcher's death came up. And it is interesting to note that the most popular song on the British music charts on the day that she died was Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Yeah. Well, she was staggering. And, you know, you come across the things like that she said, like, oh, yes, let the United Kingdom be a service economy, providing services such as financial money laundering. Well, if you don't manufacture your own cars, your own computers, you know, to name two things that, you know, get a lot of money spent on them, then you end up bankrupt, which is what the United Kingdom is, along with the United States. The only European country, of course, that isn't bankrupt is Germany. You know, which produces all the cars, BMW, Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, Audi, Volkswagen. You know, they were always a good industrial nation. They used to bang out the Panzers and, you know, the U-boats very well. And, you know, the second awful conflict was, I've peeled off so many layers off it in the last, well, in the last 2 years, but even since we last had a chat back in July of last year, you know, there were lots of Zionist Jews in the Nazi high command. And I'm certainly not totally unique in the world in thinking that the Holocaust, in which a vast number of people died of starvation and disease, even if they didn't die in gas chambers, which they may have. It was a pretext, you know, this was setting up the state of the creation of the State of Israel in 1949. And are you aware of the Balfour Declaration from 1917?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this wonderful text, of course. You know, you're going to coexist with the native Palestinians in this vast land called Palestine. It's huge, huge place. And you're going to respect their religious traditions and freedoms. And on some maps, Palestine doesn't exist. It's just called the Gaza Strip. And, you know, the State of Israel is now what Palestine used to be. And this is outrageous.
People are completely unaware of the situation at all, you know, nor the history, or nor how far back it goes. You know, they probably think that the Gaza Strip is some kind of Israeli red light district.
Yeah. Well, and also, there was the bloke called Theodor Herzl, who was a German Jew. Somewhere in the late 1800s, he dreamed up this idea of, you know, Zion, where all the Jews of the world, and there are some fabulous Jewish people around. I support a US organization called the Jewish Voice for Peace. You know, they are taking the Zionist psychopaths on head on. They're fabulous. And, you know, I saw some pictures of a demonstration not long ago here in London. And here was this Jewish rabbi, you know, the classic, you know, beard as bushy as mine, Homburg hat, scarf, all the kit. And he was saying, what we're doing to these Palestinian human beings is outrageous. But, you know, we go back to the Book of Talmud, the bankers, these people at the top of what I call the bank chain. Most banks, they lend to smaller banks and minnows and get interest out of it. They borrow off somebody further up the bank chain. And the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers are at the top. they only lend, they have only assets, no liabilities, and they just get richer, notionally, you know, got richer in inverted commas. They have more and more notional money in their bank accounts. And they're stateless. They are, like you said early on, you know, this is a global problem. You know, this group of 300 people fantasize that they own everything in the world, including you and me. And as we tell them, well, fuck your ass.
Well, you know, they do have an argument, though.
Well, I think I'm a semanticist. Mind how you pronounce that.
Yeah.
And it is...
I mean, and for those who don't know, a semanticist is somebody who romanticizes semantics. Go ahead, George.
Sorry, yeah, nothing to do with semen or anything. Semantics. And, so there was a bloke called Bernie Madoff, a Jew in the US, who did what's generally regarded as the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time, and a bloke called Harry Markopoulos, a Greek. It took him 10 years to bring it down. But the usury Ponzi scheme con job has been going for millennia. And, you know, why are these guys homeless? Because they always got thrown out of where they were, wherever they were living. They were just regarded as a, you know, local liability. All they did was, you know, what they did was, okay, I'll lend you some money today and you can give me back twice as much in a week. Yeah, we've got usury rates going on here in the UK of 4,000% in payday loan places. Now, these are, these are places on the high street.
What does that mean, though, 4,000% usury rate?
It means that if you actually work out, so it means, okay, I in advance of payday, you're totally bereft of cash, you know, to buy some milk and bread. I will give you £100 now, and you give me your £130 that you get in your paycheck in a few days' time. Now, if you actually work out the interest rates involved, they are often in the thousands. And, you know, it's just preying on people who are up shit creek to rip them off even worse.
I thought that was banking, like, 101.
Yeah, well, no, banking, I mean, say, credit cards. So the credit card that I'm about to cut in the near future, when I cash in a pension pot for the purpose, you know, that's charging a mere 17%. I saw on Amazon that they're offering a credit card with 30%.
Well, that is Amazon.
Yeah. And so that is what you call sort of pretty much legalized crime. You know, it's total madness that it's allowed. But when you come to these, you know, payday loan people, you know, they may only loan for a few days, but the annual percentage rate at the bottom of the calculation is not 15 or 30, but it's up in the thousands. And it's just preying on people who've got a fucking great problem anyway. And you don't say, oh, okay, well, look, let's organise some milk and some bread for you and your kids. They say, ah, well, I will give you this money now to go and, you know, bread, milk, you know, soup, and then I'll nick your net pay in a week's time. And it's just like you were saying earlier, it's part of this psychopathic destruction of people. And, you know, when I wander around, you know, the high street here, what's it full of? You know, shopping centres with department stores. Well, John Lewis. Well, you know, they play nice music and the middleman takes a sobbing great cut. You know, the producer is paid a small amount. The consumer pays a vastly increased amount. And John Lewis or Marks & Spencer or Tesco or Sainsbury's take to a sodding great camp. And what do you got there instead? You got gambling shops, bookies, money lending shops,
pawn shops.
Well, geez, it's funny. Up in the top of Watford High Street, there is indeed, you know, a pawn shop. You know, well, was that P-O-R-N or P-A-W-N?
A-W-N.
Yeah. Well, there is actually, you know, a sex toy shop. It's one of the healthier places around compared with the other ones.
Yeah, because we don't call sex shops pawn shops. We call them sex shops.
Yeah, well, I think I'll use that word. It's less, you know, it's less easily confused with pawn brokers.
Now imagine if you were like brokering for the porno industry. What kind of skill set would you actually need to have? You know,
we won't go there at this point in time. It's too early in the morning.
That's what she said.
Oh my God! I know when I've messed my match. Well, you know, they are relatively healthy compared with, you know, the people who sell sex toys.
Are we going off on an erect tangent here?
I am indeed, but don't tell the neighbours.
It's like a rectangle, but a tangentry one.
Yeah, yeah, and the word erect didn't come into what you just said at all.
That's what she said.
You're not a rude person like me that talks about these sorts of things.
I actually am, and that's the whole reason why I love this network, is because they allow me on occasion, if I'm feeling in the mood, to talk about these sorts of things, you know, in lustrous, vivid detail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, say one thing that I've noted is that there is this vast thing on the web called porn, you know, pornographic films. And there are some bits of it that are so deeply and evilly perverted as to bug a belief. You know, child porn consists of still or moving images of children being raped, violated, you know, sometimes by many people at once. And and we've had people, you know, just, again, I won't go off on that erection tangent. And, you know, we got a senior barrister over here saying, oh, we don't want to clutter up the courts with elderly men watching images of child sexual abuse. You know, they're just passing the time of day. At the other end of the porn industry, there's, you know, people just getting their nuts off. It's pretty healthy in the context of things compared with the dark side, the dark end of the porn industry. I reflect there are two things that have made the human race, Homo sapiens or Homo fuckwitius, you know, so successful. One is that, like every other living creature, you know, we are wired up to survive at the moment, in the instant. You know, when a gazelle sees a lion cantering up, it legs it. When I see a brick heading towards our head, or a police baton, you know, you put your arm up to defend yourself and you trip up the bit of filth, or you sort out the person throwing a brick at your head. So we've got this basic, immediate self-preservation, which extends to your family. You know, you touch my kid, I put you in orbit. And then there's the reproductive side. You know, we've got this huge sexual drive. And then, you know, when we have kids, we embrace them if we're decent people. You know, we don't leave them in a place in Portugal, two-year-olds and a four-year-old girl, while you nip off to the tapas bar without a baby alarm. And you perhaps pop back and see if they're all right every half hour, well, hour and a half. Are you aware of that McCann case? I'm sure you are.
No. You, in fact, you will be surprised when I'm not aware of. because I'm totally unplugged from the media and what everybody else is into. And essentially, when somebody comes in, it's all like free for all.
On the other side, you know, you're on the other end of the planet. You know, you will, when you're wandering around, people will chat about what's going on. But these McCanns are a couple of general practitioners, you know, medical doctors. And they went on holiday in Portugal. And as part of that, they arranged to go out for a meal at a tapas bar with friends. And they left two-year-old infants and a four-year-old girl called Madeline unattended. I don't know. I've got kids, and I've now got a grandkid, which is stunning. And when our two boys were little, you know, we tucked them up in bed, and we'd have things like alarms, and you know, so we could hear if they had a nightmare or got a problem, so we could go and see them. And these two people, Jerry and I can't remember her name. They left their kids like that, and then the daughter disappeared. And over the next few days, they kept coming up with different stories about what had happened. Yeah, they're notorious, and you know, there are documentaries that document the changing of stories. And these people, I've got a picture of these people being consoled by a pope. You know, how awful that you lost your kid. Well, and you know, it's a great sort of part of the newspaper industry, you know, statements from the brothers, you know, decades later. How awful it is that we don't know what happened to Madeline. Well, what happened to Madeline? There's a lot of fine detail missing. But her parents arranged for her to be on her own as a four-year-old for long periods of time. And you know, they make a lot of money out of their book. They are feted by politicians and popes. And I remember where I was, in which room I was, in my former home in Cripplewood, when this broke on the news, on the British Buggery Club news, I'm sure. And myself and my wife, we just had our fuse boxes blown. To think that, you know, a couple of people, you know, cognitively good, you know, you have to be quite smart to be a doctor, had left two 2-year-olds and a 4-year-old unattended in their holiday villa while they buggered off to have supper with friends. And I think it just completely blew the minds of so much of the population who, you know, who'd look out on the baby alarm or leave doors open so that, you know, if they hear a cry, you go out and sort it out. Oh, yeah. He's got his blanket all over his head. He's a bit hot. He's got a bit of a fever. And they sort it. You know, the notion of these two people putting their kids in harm's way and then being terribly surprised and outraged and attracting much sympathy when something catastrophic happens and this beautiful, sweet little girl vanishes. And it's been rumbling ever since. You know, police in Portugal saying this is a load of crock. People saying, oh, how awful, poor you. You know, it must weigh terribly on your conscience. Well, say it fucking well should. You know, and, you know, that's before we get to even nastier end. You know, all sorts of blue-eyed blonde girls get nicked. What happens to them after that is not something that I'll go into now. Yeah, there's been this huge industry. And we've got, you know, we've had these abuse homes in the UK. I have a very dear friend who was raped in one when she was 15 and made pregnant. and she now does fabulous work in child protection. And that was only the beginning of her horror. And I went definitely not going there, because she bore the kid, and things went from bad to worse. And I remember last time when we were chatting, we got stuck into this, you know, this area, because it's the most important one. I'll come on to this mega fraud presently and in the second half. And I'm 7 months down the road from where I was when we were last chatting. And we will come on to it. But the child sex abusers and those that cover for them are the other side of the same coin as the people who engage in, you know, mega fraud, mega corruption, in which all of our top political leaders are deeply involved. You know, Cameron, Blair, Clegg, Corbyn. There's something called 788 to 790 Finchley Road, which is a vast boiler room. Actually, trillions. Have you've had a session with Gordon Bowden, haven't you?
Yeah, I was in fact going to mention him to you, because I was just sitting down listening to a little recording to him about the Freemason induction system, and combined with the global cabal that creates fake companies and then pumps and dumps them, gets a whole bunch of politicians and business leaders to get all the seed capital from normal people and steal billions of pounds a year without even having to have a real company.
Yeah, well, he's one of a group of about five or six people now. But, you know, we are, and I was chatting to him on the phone the other day, and he said in his Welsh accent, "Oh, they're getting it from 360 degrees now." Because, and it's both on the child sex abuse front and on the mega fraud front. I'm going to be up in Chester at the end of the month, helping another one of this group, Tom Dobby, in Chester County Court. And, you know, we're going to sort out Cheshire West and Cheshire Council, who nicked his kids and put them in the care of their psychopath mother, even after he gained legal custody of them. And this guy, 8 years ago, was an international consultant physicist with, you know, a good, you know, worth about $1.5 million, jet setting around the world, doing fabulous projects. He's worked, well, it's mixed. He's worked with NASA, the NSA, and GCHQ. So, you know, he's no pushover on the grey cells front. He's now bankrupt, living on benefits. And we're taking on Chester West and Cheshire Council at the end of the month, and we're going to win. The latest plot, they tried to hang an injunction on him, and they thought they had it all stitched up, and then he and I and another bloke were there in the court, and the barrister hadn't even brought his diary to put some trial dates in. He was so sure that he was going to get a summary judgment from the judge, and the judge was a good guy. So there's Gordon, there's Tom Dobby, there's a bloke called Len Lawrence, who he's got the most amazing history, and he's really kicking ass at the moment. Castigar is starting a charity to investigate failed investigations in the past, and I'm to be a trustee in that. Who else is around? Oh, there's a bloke called Michael O-U-G-H, who was once a police officer until he knackered his knee chasing a villain, was then Royal Military Police, and he's a walking encyclopedia of the law. And he just, you know, there's so much rip-off goes on. People, you know, having their homes possessed on a pretext. And we're just hammering back. And it's getting very interesting, because in the next couple of months, a lot of this is going to break, including stuff that we'll come on to. We have something here in the United Kingdom or in England and Wales bit, called the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales.
That sounds like really exciting.
This is the top accounting profession cabal, formed in 1880 by Quinn Vick. And I was a member for 33 years. Yeah, I'm a very skilled accountant, as well as being into information systems. And when I turned and started investigating fraud, they started giving me a hard time. And on July the 15th of last year, I was thrown out because I investigate fraud. Now, because I did that from the inside point of view, and we'll come to it, it's all going to come up in the second half narrative, I did it as an insider. And I've recently acquired, by threatening somebody with contempt of court, the transcript of part of my hearing, in which lawyers are contradicting law. And the crux of that is that there's an ethical statement, section 150.1 of the Institute of Chartered Accountants Code of Conduct. Yeah, and chartered accountants were doing the auditing of banks in 2007-2008, you know, when it turned out the bank balance sheets were not so pretty after all. And this statement, on the basis of which I was hung out, and I obliged them to, all professional accountants shall, and no, not even just chartered accountants, but all professional accountants shall, at all times, behave with courtesy and consideration to all that they come into contact with in the course of their work. Well, sounds frightfully prim and Victorian, but you know, what do you do when you find that you've tangled with a criminal? Oh, how nice, Mr. Criminal. I've got to be frightfully polite to you, old chap, and I've got to, you know, account for your crimes faultlessly. And I got thrown out, and I got a fabulous picture of just me just afterwards. It was taken by another key and noisy player called John Patterson. And, you know, they had just dug their own grave, and they're going to find it filled in, pushed into it and filled in the next couple of months.
DiCaprio style.
Well, I'm not aware of the reference you're making.
It was ironically a reference to The Revenant, which DiCaprio just won an Oscar for, and there's a scene in it when he's being pushed into a grave and buried while he's still alive.
Yeah. Well, he obviously, I take it in the movie, he manages to avoid being buried dead.
Yeah.
Well, the Institute of Chartered Accountants, and we'll come on to it, it's only one of six, seven or eight regulators that I got nailed here in the UK. You know, it's about to be dead.
There are some people that might argue that a chartered accountant is never really alive.
I've got some very dear friends, and one person who's like a father figure to me. And yeah, I'm 62. And there's somebody else that helped me with some of my fraud work, and they're FCAs, fucking cunts of arseholes, except they're actually decent people.
They're DFCAs. Decent. Sorry? Fucking... They're DFCAs. Decent fucking exactly. Cunts of arseholes. Yeah.
But the establishment is totally corrupt and perverted, and there are so many Jews involved. We'll come on to this, you know, Zionist Jew theme. You know, we're heading for the break soon, I notice.
Well, we are, and I just wanted to say that there's this thing that's been recurring lately quite a lot, is... there is a global cabal, right? And we know Rothschilds and Rockefellers, all that thing. And people wonder about the recruiting, right? And there's a hell of a lot of Jewish involvement, hell of a lot of Freemason involvement, but it doesn't stop there. But those institutions and those religions and groups of people, etc., aren't all in on it, but there are large elements of people that are, you know, controllers of their community. There's an elite of all kinds of different races, creeds, and religions and everything like that, and at the very, very top of almost every structure, there's some kind of scumbaggery that's on the take.
Well, it's the Pope, it's Perez. You know, Perez, who was president of Israel for a while.
It was actually Perez Perez.
Sorry, Shimon Peres. But when he was State of Israel Defense Minister back in 1975, he flogged some, and this is one of Gordon's things he may have meant, he flogged some 20-kiloton warheads to old Pick Berta down on your side of the planet so that he could deal with terrorism.
Well, because nothing surgically like weeds out terrorists like a nuclear blast, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, and terrorists are these stupid people who, you know, spread themselves into small cells, widely distributed, so they can't be taken out. So what are you going to do with a nuke?
And you're going to do... this reminds me of what comedian Steve Hughes said. He says, how can you have a war on terror? Because what does war cause? Well, terror, but it's a different kind of terror. It's a terror light, you know, sort of a diet terror, I can't believe it's not terror.
Well, terrorism, the original definition is what governments do to their people. That is the original.
It's a form of government. Governance over the masses by coercing them into doing what the government wills by act of terrorizing them.
I'm sure you'll know the fabulous film movie called V for Vendetta.
Well, of course, my name's Vinny, you know, Vinny for Vendetta.
Yeah, so, God, it was you. God, you put on a spectacular British-English accent for that. And
well, you need somebody from down under to play that kind of character, obviously.
Yeah, because no comment. I'll sort you out. I'm going to come 12,500 miles in an aeroplane to sort you out if you carry on like this. And that revolutionary speech is staggering for its psychological... I was very unwell at that time. I was between patches of suicide attempts then. It was only a couple of months ago that a LinkedIn contact from Holland, who wishes to remain anonymous because he's actually in work at the moment, sent me the text of the speech. And in fact, a very dear friend had referred me to the film before, but I'd been really busy. And that speech, I post it so often. I've got to know so many of the key phrases in it.
You mean remember the 5th of November? That one.
Exactly. Well, and you know,
I can recite it real quickly for you. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
And, you know, the psychological stuff, yes. Yes, some people will be made accountable, but when it comes to the real problem, go look in the mirror. And, you know, your common sense has been hijacked by fear.
Oh, that one.
Oh, Jesus. It's
totally different speech then. And here is the break. Right, so we're going to go and we're going to have a quick coffee and a recap because it's like effing o'clock in the effing morning wherever the F George is calling us in from.
It was afternoon tea time.
Yes. Let's keep the mystique up for the audience, eh, about the free flow of information. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, especially when it's done in my narrator voice. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being enslaved by ruthless criminal sociopathic scum doesn't mean we can't make it fun. My very special guest is George Gretton, and I have a great announcement, ladies and gentlemen. You don't need to worry about anything anymore. You know why? Because everything's probably a lot worse than you think it is.
Oh, and Vinny, this is the ghost of George Gretton speaking. I was murdered while I was making my cup of tea.
If you say so, you sound like Vlad the Impaler.
And one quick thing. You know, you keep telling Brits that the show starts at 2 o'clock in the morning as opposed to 3. You've done that to me twice.
There is a time zone, like, weird thing that happens, like, with summer
You have to listen. I've created an application, and not an app, in that poxy thing Excel that I will circulate, in which you can plug in a date, and it will tell you around the 24 different time zones what time it is, like 2100 on a Tuesday evening in Pacific Standard Time, and it will rattle out what stupid time of the day it is. You know, you're now 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm 3 o'clock in the morning. Both were on Wednesday, the 9th. In Texas, where I think the studio is, they are now 10 o'clock in the evening, and in Oregon and California and places, they're 8 o'clock. Now, I've automated it. I'll get it to you.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Yeah. Anyway, I've now got, and it's interesting, the structure's been the same. We just did a sort of shooting from the hip first session. Now, I've got this pile of documents in front of me. And this is what I was wanting to draw your attention to. This is a set of 13 documents that's already gone to every member of the cabinet in the Tory party in Parliament, which includes a few peers as well as MPs. It's gone to some of the shadow cabinet, and I even had an acknowledgement of receipt from somebody called Hilary Benn, who's the son of a man called Tony Benn, who was a giant of the 20th century. And I'd like just to, if I read at least, let me start, can I start with the first cover letter?
George, we only have 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, of course you can. I mean,
I've timed it. I can do this one, and it's quite punchy, and it's really focused.
Well, let's get on with it then.
Okay. So this is a letter that I sent to somebody called the Right Honourable David Cameron, member of the Conservative Party, member for the constituency of Witney, position in sequential constituency order 1631. That's a fancy bit of my IS work. Prime Minister and First Lord of the Treasury and Minister for the Civil Service. So he's the top dickhead at the moment. I call him Dave Cameron. And it goes on. The addressees of these letters are the members of the government cabinet, the members of the shadow cabinet in the first place. Next paragraph. I have a pack, in inverted commas, almost complete for delivery, also via Derby Gate, which is the post-in room for Parliament, to all the rest of the 650 members of Parliament in the first place. That disembowels, for starters. Bullet point. The Metropolitan Police, in inverted commas, via Sir Bernard, fraud is difficult to prove, Hogan Howe, that explains why there have been only 3 such fraud cases in the last 10 years. Next bullet point. The Charity, in inverted commas, Commission, via William Shawcross, CBO, Commander of the Victorian Order, repeat chairman thanks to Baron Francis Maud, despite my J'accuse document sent to Shawcross, son of Hartley, and to many tens of others remaining unattended to, unaddressed, with no response, even via pre-action protocol letter re-defamation served on me. So I've now named Britain's top cop, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, and William Shawcross, who was appointed chairman of the Charity Commission and has been reappointed since, even with my accusations, when he was then trustee of something called the Anglo-Israel Association, which has been backing Zionism since 1949, and where the Israeli ambassador to London is the honorary president. Next bullet point, the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales of Arthur Bailey, immediate past president, and CEO Michael Inverse, quote, audit is not a compliance tool, is it? Next bullet point, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, Farmers Heather Gelder, who could not possibly investigate as head of fraud investigations at the Solicitors Regulation Authority, Mr. Benjamin Jowett and Ms. Annabel Jester, employees at the ICAEW Professional Misconduct Department, however great were their astonishing transgressions. One last bit of this. And in addition, the independent, in inverted commas, Police Complaints Commission and the National Crime Agency, with the initially kind but then noticeably limited help of Richard Harrington, my local MP, a man of Jewish background that went to Leeds Grammar School. I went to very Catholic Ampleforth College, where Abbot Hume started. And that's as much as I'll read out. I then say that I've exposed the Financial Misconduct Authority.
What? I'm thinking you may as well actually just read it all out, George, because it'd be good to have it an audio record of it for people to listen to, as well as the documented one they could read.
Let me just press on. Thank you. I'm delighted. Block capitals red, large print. Stop the presses! The Financial Misconduct Authority has just sadly, and once again very disappointingly, joined in my mind the ranks of the illusory and bent regulators that are part of the mega fraud problem rather than any part of its remedy. This is around my reporting to them the fine detail and evidence of vast abuses of law and payment control that, one, Ian Duncan Smith's Department of Work and Pensions, that has an annual budget of some £170 billion. Two, at a GE Money company, which has, as per its 2014, inverted commas, financial statements, a mortgage portfolio of approximately £6 billion, an interest income of £202 million, a net profit of £12 million, brackets, but no corporation tax charge, group relief, and dot, dot, dot. A £7 million provision deep in the notes to correct some mortgage account balances that the directors knew were incorrect, block capitals, and plan, block capitals, sometime after the account's signing date to, I quote, remediate. That's the word in the accounts, in the note. Next paragraph, dot, 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 all endorsed by KPMG LLP, that recently transferred its trading activities from KPMG Audit Limited to KPMG LLP, which is better when being sued for audit failures, such as in the lead-up to the 2007-08 financial crash, when bank profit and loss expense payments out had been accounted for in the balance sheet as toxic loans. I'm getting a bit technical there, but accountants will understand. Next paragraph. I urgently flagged...
You're on talk radio. You don't need to say next paragraph. If you just keep talking, it becomes apparent.
I urgently flagged this to the FCA in three detailed emails, referring them to my established form on the web re anti-fraud, anti-corruption, and anti-child sexual and other abuse activities. And I didn't hear a dicky bird from Andrew Bailey and his team, to whom I thus referred my widely known brackets counter-MET, CC, ICAW, SRA activities. Now, I was just, getting well into taking the piss. As I peel off layer after layer of this, I go from gobsmacked to mind-boggled. A self-evidently false assessment of a couple-stroke-two-partner situation by a Department of Work and Pensions agent, massive payment delays, utterly incomprehensible letters from the DWP, with facts that change between letters, and then a very late bulk catch-up payment of a pension that transparently seems, if you put the previous quoted figures into a spreadsheet to be £600 light. A fraud! And yeah, I've got the fine detail on that. And there's more. When I go through to the fraud department of the DWP to report internal to DWP fraud and insisting in coming to meet a person in fraud that has my level of seniority experience, I'm told, oh, you can't do that. We don't meet people. Go to your local job centre and they will connect you via phone to a remote person. And I note here that we have something called the Citizens Advice Bureau that picks up when people have tried to report a crime to the police. You go to the Citizens Advice Bureau. This is almost on a par with the National Crime Agency, where you cannot even find out which, quote, law enforcement agency did not look into your suspicious activity report. Read William Shawcross, Arthur Bailey, and Michael Izzer. As a now excluded from the ICAEW unprofessional accountant, excluded since I was so inconsiderate and discourteous as to accuse a chap of fraud under section 150.1 of the ICAEW Code of Ethical Conduct with a costs order of £19,058, which was incorrectly treated vis-a-vis VAT, that has not since been enforced in quotes, in a real court of law and by a judge, versus in a kangaroo sane by three tribunal members, including non-accountant Paul Brooks, at the International Disputes Resolution Centre at 70 Fleet Street, EC4YYEU, YEU, on the 14th and 15th of July 2015, with a solicitor advocate present as legal advisor, and a solicitor prosecuting on behalf of the Illegal in Existence and Activities Investigation Committee, where Heather Gelder will not touch that solicitor. Hang on, let me carry on.
I was just going to comment and remark about how bad your business must be going if you're a solicitor that people won't solicit.
Well, I mean, say, I won't start going there. I've got a picture of I can't find any... Well, no, I have found a picture of Heather Gelder. She looks like a real dyke. As for Annabel Jester, when she's in prison, she's going to be a real target.
But anyway, back on to it.
Sorry?
But let's get back to it.
Yeah, okay. So information system, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying is that there are here gross failures of fundamental controls and necessary procedures, gross failure of internal check and review, and of internal and external audit. You know, I'm a proper accountant, and I understand these things, both at DWP with an annual budget in 12 digits, and at GE Money, and with its auditors KPMG LLP. It also thus lays bare the corruption within the entire government, and perhaps even within the whole current illusion of parliamentary democracy, which illusion has been around since shortly after the end of the Second Awful War, at the very least, say 1949, although the Balfour Declaration was back in 1917. My report of this staggering, almost inconceivable as having taken place, mind-boggling case has evoked the black hole properties of the Financial Misconduct Authority over the last week or so. So they have twigged and shut up and battened down the hatches, as do all but the most insane industry, with one exception who lives in a Grade 2 listed property just outside Bath. He was the complainant in the ICAEW professional misconduct matter that saw me thrown out of the ICAEW after 33. Not, of course, that he had to actually attend to present his evidence in person and thus be cross-examined by me. He is also the sole prosecution witness and complainant in Regina versus George Graham. Will I get transported to the colonies? The penal. In the trial currently scheduled to Bath Magistrates Court on the 24th of March 2016, in which I face a single charge of harassment without violence by me against him, Alan James Humphreys. He's now dead meat. The FCA has rendered me no response or acknowledgement at all. Brackets. Nil, zero, null. Stuart Hall, another convicted child sex offender at the BBC. So a three-part incoming metaphorical trident from me. Read the Department of Work and Pensions and GE Money in their Canary Wharf orifices that are adjacent to banks, firms of accountants, etc., etc., as dreamed up by Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, who decried and exported manufacturing in favour of a financial services economy based on money laundering, of which the City of London is the world capital. While I, and indeed others, have vast mountains of documentary evidence in our individual patches, this DWP carnage just leaps out of the plethora of conflicting decisions and pages from the DWP that are clearly intended to confuse and confound. I have a page of a GE Money mortgage account that was a pivotal element of evidence supplied to a county court of law in Nuneaton on the 14th of January 2014, part of the end product of which was a suspended property possession order against my friend and colleague B, which malicious and harassing process also dreadfully affected B's physical health by a series of mini-strokes that are medically documenting as arising from excessive stress. The judge was a District Judge 7, but what is a family division judge doing in a potential property possession case? And I note, a heart surgeon replaced my mitral valve with my heart still for 161 minutes and my life being sustained by an external pump and devices. I would not have had a cranium surgeon do the job. I note then, a barrister processing a derivative action claim in a related case in which I am involved turned down an intellectual property theft case, where it was my property that two people had tried to steal in a nine-month conspiracy, since it was not in his patch of expertise. Specialisation validly applies. Philosophers do not teach physics at Oxford, where I read physics and philosophy, nor physicist philosophy. We're almost there. I know that B's work is, or was, as an HGV2 truck driver, rigid-bodied up to a massive 28 tonnes, so that he was less professionally trained to spot the significant series of cash-received entries that totally did not belong in his mortgage account within GE Money. Although he does have a connection with the individual to whom the money should have been paid by her bank account as an element of her awarded pension, and they had not, in defiance of facts, though they had, been assessed as a couple. If they were a couple, how and why did Lady A move out when her pension under her payments under her pension entitlements started to settle down to rent her own home? Do couples live in separate homes? This element is described in the relevant letter to A from the Department of Work and Pensions as the element supporting her generalised housing costs. But she has never ever been a mortgagee in the United Kingdom. She has only rented, and thus must not be quoted B's mortgage account details on the false assumption that they were her. Data Protection Act 1988, actually the Criminal Identity Protection Act 1988. So how, apart from utter system and user chaos and carnage, can A get the letter from the DWP that attributes to her B's mortgage account details? So I go into a block, a bold paragraph. Regardless of the precise technical details and of any interpretations of mine, the bottom result has been that, in the most basic terms, part of one person's pension has been paid rather than into her bank account, along with the other part of her pension award, into the mortgage account of a mortgagee with GE Money, where she has and had no connection with any mortgage provider at all, at least in the United Kingdom, and where the connection between A and B was fabricated ab initio and later totally demonstrated as a fabrication. Both A and B made repeated inquiries to the DWP, got more and more confused and exasperated, and in the end retired utterly baffled. And these are far more resourceful people, individuals, and most on benefits. I have resolved a number of accounting and information systems, pig's ears, including helping dig the financial fellowship, the Richmond Fellowship, out of a huge self-inflicted own goal hole in 2001 and 2002 in that very worthy mental health charity from whose services I just before benefited in a recovery centre and was still being supported ongoing. But I have never ever encountered such a massive fuck up in this, in both the gross and fine details of process and control failure, let alone in a UK government department that throws sprays around payments in excess of $150 billion per annum, and that's before we get to GE money. I note that the discussion of the DWP aspect of this episode has evolved a narrative on a composite episode in which about 100 sets of claimant bank details were amended on the supposed pretext of claimants having moved house. But bank accounts and also email addresses are physical address independent. 100 sets of benefit payment bank account details falsely altered? News section. Many will remember Margaret Thatcher's impassioned right to buy council houses campaign. Let's analyse that, for the benefit of hindsight. Council tenants, who are not normally big earners, take out a hefty mortgage from a bank or building society, or from a naked and unregulated finance organisation, such as a commercial company in the international US-controlled General Electric Group that has formed staggering problems around the US Department of Defense. A finance company works assiduously for the mortgage account to fail, including by charging staggering fees and solicitor's bills for court actions, and is then granted by a judge a possession order that is never a repossession order, since the property never belonged to GE Money or other unregulated finance company. So the property that was once publicly owned for the benefit of low-income families is now the property of a private, commercial, bank or finance organisation. Indeed, privatisation has taken place. Public property has been transferred to bankers at a fraction of its true value. Next paragraph. I greatly look forward to hearing from cabinet members and shadow cabinet members in the context of what I've dumped on you all, and as to whether Ian Duncan Smith will be party to this, I can only wait and see. His department has been caught in flagrante. He may be soon hated as much by his former colleagues as by the bulk of the UK population. In all truth and sincerity, and I remain the servant of all good, decent, and honest citizens of the United Kingdom, and through, the example of my dear dad, Vice Admiral Sir Peter Gretton, KCB, DSO thrice, OBE, DSC, and I put a picture of him there. Copies to Gordon Bowden, ex-RAF engineer and mega fraud investigator since 2002, Leonard Brackett's Len Lawrence, ex-RN, Royal Navy submariner, civil pilot and investigator, Dr. Tom Dobby, former international physics consultant and investigator, and John Patterson, investigator. I'm glad I managed to read that out. It took quite a long time. You'll observe that it's very, very detailed. It zooms between the big picture, saying what the fuck is going on in a government department that spends £170 billion a year, and how much money gets diverted to other pockets. You know, that £600 that my friend didn't get yeah, had to go somewhere else.
Stolen and laundered?
Oh, no, just, well, it's just blatant theft within the Department of Work and Pensions.
Well, no need for laundering.
Well, you know, it's already there. So, yeah, so I've got one case of one lady who was, in fact, a refugee from South Africa. You know, was entitled to become a citizen, got an NI number, got on, and the first thing that happened is that she was ripped off by 600 quid compared with what she'd previously been told she was entitled to. And the final, I've seen the bit of paper saying, oh, here are arrears this much. No analysis of it, because that would reveal that she'd just been ripped off by 600 quid. And I go for the head Britain's top cop, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, who told me, you know, fraud is difficult. He told that to me, to my face, at a range of 10 feet. And I gave him my J'accuse document and two other London borough commanders 18 months ago. Oh, no. Fraud is difficult to prove. I've got the Charity Commission. William Shawcross is my top target. He's a friend of Queen Elizabeth and of Prince Charles, the heir to the throne. You know, I've got a picture with the three, him giving her a book about her mum or non-mum. When he goes, it's going to be spectacular. I've got named the two top dogs in the Institute of Chartered Accountants. And the third most senior person in the executive, somebody called Les Smith, whose LinkedIn picture used to be a Photoshop of Liz Hurley in a safety pin dress and him in place of Hugh Grant. He was put between me and the board in February 2015, a year ago, as the negotiator. Well, he actually resigned. He stopped working for the Institute in August 2015. He's not been replaced in this six-figure salary job. And his name has only just been removed from the Institute of Chartered Accountants website. So he's my biggest scalp ever, so far. I've shafted the Solicitors Regulation Authority, to whom I've just reported a whole lot more solicitor frauds. And Mr. Benjamin Jowett is now the subject of great interest. I've reported him to Thames Valley Police for an offence that could get him 2 years in the nick, pretending to be a barrister when he's not. Thames Valley Police are being characteristically, oh, we don't do crime. I've yesterday reported him to his head of department at the Institute, saying that he's in line for criminal charges. And he's also been written a letter by the Bar Standards Board telling him that while he never was a barrister, he's not part of their outfit, he must not on his LinkedIn profile page claim to be a qualified barrister. He is going to find himself very uncomfortable in the near future. And I got his predecessor as secretary to the investigation committee at the Institute, Mrs. Lisa McNeiler. She totally quit her paid job 2 weeks after I started asking her questions. Poof, gone.
Where do these people go to, though? They sometimes they can be sent on the run. In fact, I talked with Gordon about this, and he said it's like a game. You have to really just think of it like a game, going after these people, well, don't you?
Except Gordon and I chat a lot, and he's been working at this for actually 16 years. What I know is that when I've exposed... So Les Smith is now self-employed. He's now on... If you look at his LinkedIn page, he's a self-employed person offering advice in various areas. Now, that is a good scalp. Somebody called Fell, for Felicity Hargreaves, who's the famous one that sent me a charge letter saying that between the dates of to be confirmed and to be confirmed, she sent me an accusatory letter with dates to be confirmed, between to be confirmed and to be confirmed. I got that on the 22nd of September 2012. She resigned the Institute in February this year. Well, her name is Shit, along with Mrs. Lisa McNeela and Les Smith. In the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, I forced 5 director trustee resignations, very noisily. Those people's names are mud. I'm about to get, well, Benjamin Jowett is going to find his capacity to earn ever again, unless he emigrates, extremely difficult, as are the police officers obstructing the case. I've got over 20 police officers listed for perversion of the course of justice and misconduct in public office, just around my 3 main cases. 10 in Avon and Somerset, where that includes the police and crime commissioner, who goes about as Ms. Sue Mount Stevens, but she's actually millionaireess Mrs. Sue Robertson, who's married to a prominent Southwest businessman. And she allowed Chief Constable Nick Garganoff he got 8 misconduct charges, none of which were gross. The last one of which is that he took a picture of his penis on a police iPhone and sent it to a female police colleague in Avon and Somerset. Now, would you call that gross misconduct, or would you just call it misconduct?
I might call it misuse of a baton, but...
Yes. Yeah. I was wondering what you would elaborate on the possibilities. And, you know, this bloke, and this is the same bloke who went to Paris when Lady Di did or did not die. And while he was there, he had a sexual liaison with a wife in the British Embassy. Yeah, a notorious person who Mrs. Robertson, and not Mrs. Robinson, I might say, appointed as Chief Constable when she became Police and Crime Commissioner. The existing Chief Constable, local Colin Pork, said, he didn't use these words, he said, well, I'm not even going to be considered for this post now that you've arrived, madam. And Nick Garden has now got strong connections, it seems, with G4S, which is a global fascist organisation with considerable influence of somebody called Tees May, who's our Home Secretary. This letter, I'm obviously not going to read out the remaining 13 documents.
Well, we certainly don't have time. We maybe have time for one more.
Well, let's do the cracker. Okay, so this is a letter dated Thursday, the 23rd of July, 2015. 2-1. William Shawcross, Chairman of the Charity Commission. And these were hand-delivered and signed for. 2. Arthur Bailey, President of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. 3. Michael Izzer, Chief Executive Officer of that same institute. Via hand delivery to 1. Drummond Gate Pimlico, Chartered Accountants Hall, and the Parliamentary Accounts Committee, London, and Lady Stroke Mrs. Margaret Hodge, Houses of Parliament. 3. Addressee gentlemen, over the last year, I've been placing documents in your hands, at least electronically, via your PAs, including the faithful Angie Williams, who was so eloquent in PA Life article, that accuse you all 3 of you, of criminal conspiracy to pervert the course of justice in your various efforts to avoid the exposure of money laundering at the Institute of Brewing and Distilling and at the British Pub Association, Beer and Pub Association, where the current quantum is around 30 million quid. The last 4.6 million was bunged into something called the British... Oh, hang on, what's it called? It's a livery company. The Worshipful Company of Brewers. The last 4.6 million. It was in the accounts that came out after this. Mr. Shawcross, fellow University College Oxford old member, along with President Bill Clinton, I was simply staggered along with many others, that you were reappointed chairman of the Charity Commission in January of this year, with my J'accuse document, gauntlet, lying unaddressed at your feet. You had 5 months to tidy up via open and honest clarifying dialogue, or via an action for defamation, but you chose not to. Another suspect of mine, Alan James Humphreys, also chose to disregard my lawful challenge to him, and instead chose one to make a harassment complaint against me to a very obliging inspector, Steve Mildren, at Bath Police Station. Two, to make an unprofessional conduct against me that ultimately led to my being excluded from my former of 33 years Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. I was excluded under the paragraph of section 151 of the ICAEW Code of Ethics that goes reads, I'll repeat it, professional accountants shall conduct themselves with courtesy and consideration towards all with whom they come into contact when performing their work. I insisted that I would put my pursuit of fraud and frauds always above any consideration for or of that totally perverted and vexatious injunction, and I was excluded as a result, as directly as asserted so exactly and specifically by the non-accountant, well, he's actually the husband of a chartered accountant and a management accountant, member of a tribunal, Paul Brooks. Never was a trap better sprung. And I do ramble on. Once I start getting in piss-taking mode, I do lay it on with a trowel.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
You hadn't noticed? Yeah, well, it would be invisible to you. You know, you don't use a trowel, you use a forklift. And I got a letter out of that from the Committee of Public Accounts, from a man who has since lost his job. Dear Mr. Graham, 29th of July. And this is a piss-take ironic thing of the highest glory. Thank you for providing the committee with a copy of your letter addressed to William Shawcross, Arthur Bailey and Michael Izzer. Although you have not specifically requested it in this instance, I feel that I should reiterate that the committee does not investigate individual cases. Yeah, that's what they do. Oh, we don't investigate individual cases, such as the allegations of money laundering you have made against the Institute of Brewing and Distilling and the British Beer and Pub Association, and then the Worshipful Company of Brewers. The committee will then sometimes use individual cases to illuminate issues in an organisation in the context of its spending, but the inquiry will itself not focus on such cases. Individual cases may be useful to highlight systemic issues that inhibit the organisation from achieving value for money for its spending. This is a young bloke, delightful bloke. With regards to the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales, brackets ICAEW, the committee has no remit to investigate with his body, as he is not funded by public money, i.e. money received by the Treasury through taxation. If you have not already done so, I would recommend that you contact the National Crime Agency's UK Financial Intelligence Unit and submit a suspicious activity report. As ever, please feel free to provide the committee with any information you think it may find useful, bearing in mind the points I've made about Jamie Morley. Well, he lost his job there. I went to the NCA and finally exposed that I bunked in a report, heard nothing. It was put on a database that's accessible, I quote, to law enforcement agencies. And I said to the woman I was talking to, next you're going to tell me, but you can't tell me what enforcement agencies those are. She said, yes. So the National Crime Agency is just another of these total fucking charades. I cannot make an individual accountable for not picking up on this. And if you think that this PAC, which has gone to 50 or 60 MPs so far, and will trickle into the rest, is anything other than TNT, then I'll be surprised. I rest my case, my lad. It's what I've exposed through three cases pursued assiduously and carefully and documented and evidenced, just like Gordon Bowden does over 3.5 years, is that they're corrupt at the top of the Met, the Charity Commission, the ICAEW, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, the National Crime Agency, and the totally unindependent Police and Complaints Commission. All documented.
People have no idea how much documentation there is to prove all of these kind of things, right? And that's why the people like yourself and like Gordon have actually said to me, the genuine surprise that actually comes to you as professionals looking into this for the first time, and what it proves to me is that time after time for somebody's entire life, you can be... witness to a scam and not even know that a scam's taking place until you look a little bit further?
Well, or you are, you see, here in the UK, we've got a population of about 60 million. There are between 5 and 10 million people within that who are more or less complicit and accepting of it. All the filth, all the professions, all the MPs, all the social workers, you know, that's before you get to the bankers and the corporate bosses, they're all in it. And they think they're safe because they're in this vast herd. But I saw a fabulous video of a pack of wolves chasing a herd of buffalo through deep snow. They didn't go near the buffalo because they got their heads kicked in. They just waited until one weakened and fell out. They killed it and ate it. And my mantra is we take them out one by one. And I'm piling the pressure on a lot of top people. A select number. Sir Bernard Urganel, who's just been reappointed for another year. William Shawcross, close friend of the Queen and heir. Totally bent. Yeah, what's a Zionist doing running the Charity Commission? Yeah, which comes down like a ton of bricks on terrorists trying to raise funds for Palestine. You know, the two top dogs in the executive of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, Mrs. Heather Gelder, head of investigations at the Solicitors Regulation Authority. And one thing I know as somebody who's psychologically aware is that the pressure building up is relentless. And as Gordon Bowden put it a couple of days back, it's coming in from 360 degrees. Child sexual abuse, mega fraud, both different sides of the same coin by the same people. And my own view, I've got this bloke, Benjamin Jowett now, his steward. I've got the transcript of my disciplinary hearing, which I beat out of him by threatening him with contempt of court. It is going to destroy the Institute of Chartered Accountants and all the lawyers associated with it. There's a big bang coming here in the UK, and we think it's then going to ripple through the English-speaking world. Because the picture here, you know, so I'm saying all of these regulators, they're all bent. The people who work in the grassroots of them are often really nice, civilized people with their hearts in the right place. I was talking to somebody at the Solicitors Regulation Authority yesterday, and he was horrified, and it was genuine. He wished me well, and I just told him that his boss was bent. you know, there are a few decent chartered accountants around. There are a few closet decent people who are police officers, accountants, social workers. You know, we've got an adoption industry here in the UK. Kids are adopted and sold to the US. You know, kids are in some delivery rooms. There's a police officer and a social worker present to nick the newborn out of the concern of future abuse. Future abuse.
I said the other day that vengeance is when you try to harm the people who have harmed you. Justice is when you prevent them from harming others.
Well, and you get them banged up in, or banged up, or, and we need to, have you got the death penalty down there under, or did you get rid of it?
No, we don't have the death penalty, and also we can no longer, well, we did have it, but only for treason until the new Prime Minister, who used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York for 2 years in charge of the foreign bond and derivatives trade in Europe, changed that law so that he couldn't be charged with treason or executed for it, but if he committed it.
He executed himself, and Tony Blair did the same thing.
Which is, you know, just pure coincidence, by the way!
William Shawcross is my number one target, and he may top himself when this all craps out. He may not be able to cope. His dad was somebody called Hartley Shawcross, who was chief UK prosecutor at Nuremberg. And he said some fabulously eloquent things then. He said, this is not the victors settling scores. This is justice, and we have to have justice. And they hanged 20 grotesque war criminals by the neck. And that was, in my view, totally just. My dad served fabulously in the Second War and helped win the Battle of the Atlantic. Another friend of mine, his dad flew Spitfires, shot down five times, twice in occupied territory, escaped from one POW camp, ended up in Colditz. And we've now got these war criminals infesting. Tony Blair, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, if you give him, you know, even if he's got two brain cells to rub together. Obama.
He doesn't.
The Clintons, Hollande, Putin. And they've all banned the death penalty so that they can't get nicked under it. And that's before you get to the child sex offenders.
Well, they just want to make sure that the... can you turn your speakers down just a little bit there, George? I think they just want to make sure that when they inevitably commit treason or get charged with it or whatever, the worst thing that's going to happen to them is they're going to go to a 5-star minimum security resort.
Yeah. Well, Bernie Madoff is said to be very comfortable working out his 150-year sentence in the States. He got 150 years for his Ponzi scheme. I like the Yanks in this way. They don't pat them on the head and say, well, you can come out of the nick and, you know, once half your sentence is served. Well, he's an old man already. He's not going to make it to 160. And we've got, you know, as you know, I call myself the nemesis of charlatans. The Greek goddess Nemesis was goddess of retribution. Before the Nazarene came along and said, oh, turn the other cheek and get it slashed again. You know, forgive your abuser so they can abuse you serially. Sorry if I was shouting, I'm quite impassioned at the moment, as you can tell.
I completely understand, because it happens to me. Just having a conversation with somebody about this happening to them, we all have bad experiences in our lives, and no matter how much we try to forget the things that have happened to us that we don't want to remember, they're always the things that come back at us when we least want to remember them. They get triggered and they don't go away. You just learn to live with it, kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm going to add to that. With what's happened to me in my life, starting with what my mother was doing to me between 5 and 7 in the first place, and I've got vivid memories of the second occasion. The first one, I've actually got a memory blackout because I was so frightened I was going to die. Now, I, in one sense, have post-traumatic stress disorder, except that I've emerged from that. You know, I spent 22 years on strong antipsychotic medication that screwed my kidneys to bits. I don't take it anymore. It was to deal with my colossal depression, you know, 3 suicide attempts included. And I have that in mind, but it doesn't affect me anymore, except in the anger that I now focus on the abusers. And it's very important, and you know, people like Kaz Gray, Kaz Tigger, is an amazing survivor. And she devotes her vast energies and huge intelligence to addressing these things in a lawful, determined way, so that we get people banged up in prison.
Which the private prison complex gets the profit off endlessly. For the next 150 years, apparently.
but yes, well, obviously, you people down under have a different view of, you know, penal servitude. But at least one area took on G4S to run.
By the way, New Zealanders don't like the term down under. We prefer slave colony.
Okay, fine, slave colony.
The plantation.
Yeah, and whips and chains and shackles. And you're different from your sort of neighbours in the larger lump down there.
Yeah, very different. We're not a desert surrounded by alcoholics.
Thank you. I will consider that stored for our next one to wind up.
We're a bunch of alcoholics that live in a pristine rainforest that we cut down.
And there is, and one thing that you'll be aware of, and you are, you know, you keep pouring petrol on the flames. There are a lot of people who are now just not prepared to tolerate this shit anymore.
Well, let's hope that number only accumulates.
Well, it is accumulating, but my great mantra, we take them out one by one. Dave Cameron is not going to be around much longer. Well, he's already announced he's going. He will retire to Panama, where Cameron family money is. George Osborne, did you see that video of George Osborne front bench in the House of Commons, stoned out of his head?
No, but you could be talking about nearly any politician. I mean, I'm looking at these people like they've been snorting Xanax and Hubba Bubba like for about 4 hours in the men's room that morning.
Money bags. You know, he's slashing. You know, what's going on over here? You know, the Lords have just voted through a £30 reduction in the benefit that I now get. But they've pushed it too far. They've become too demented, too detached. And it is going to catch up with them. The one person that most are totally terrified of is Tease May, our current Home Secretary. She is evil.
George, now, Gordon doesn't have a website running up yet. Do you have a website running up yet? And if not, man, somebody has to really jump in there, because there's a whole bunch of you investigator guys doing that. But yes, go ahead.
As a last bit of news, there's a bloke called Tim Wade who has just created a website that's going to come live soon, fraudandcorruptionexposure.co.uk.
fraudandcorruptionexposure.co.uk, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening in, and please donate at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. See you again.